Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, this first day of December 2023. Among the highlights of the show, the latest about Ukraine, about Hamas, Israel, and the perhaps not so great debate between Ron DeSantis and Gavin Newsom of last night, which was striking and significant in ways that one of the parties doesn't like at all. I begin with Secretary of State Blinken declaring we must and will continue to support Ukraine. I mean, this is nutty, in my opinion. But here we have our Secretary of State. This is from the Libertarian Institute. Secretary of State Antony Blinken dismissed reports that the U.S. was pushing Ukraine toward negotiating an end to the war with Russia, which, of course, would be the right thing to do, during a meeting of NATO foreign ministers. At the summit, Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba said Ukraine had a de facto NATO military. Blinken was at NATO headquarters in Brussels for the conference. He said, some are questioning whether the United States and other NATO allies in truth continue to stand with Ukraine as we enter the second winter of Russian President Zelensky's brutality, so he calls it, in fact. Putin has been extraordinarily generous and kind, in my opinion, seeking to minimize civilian casualties, treating prisoners of war with respect and the like. But the answer here today at NATO is clear and unwavering. We must and we will continue to support Ukraine. I don't have a guest in the studio with me today. I do have in effect, Scott Bennett and Scott Ritter as my feature guests. Scott Bennett, of course, on Ukraine. Here's another interview Scott has given on Russian TV. It begins in Russian, but quickly turns to English.
У нас работает, у нас перевод работает, все в порядке. Обращайся к редакторам. Скажи, обращайся к редакторам, наступает такая тяжелая пауза. Can I speak English? Hello. Scott, okay. Scott Bennett, у нас в эфире бывший офицер сил специальных операций США. Scott, very good morning.
It's a wonderful day to be with you. I'm very happy.
Thank you for coming. Scott, that's not your first war. And you've been around this very unusual time that we live in for quite a while, and you've seen a lot of, you know, you've seen a lot. What do you make out of what's happening right now on the front line? Do you see any changes? How come that America that used to be very, very smart, understood in terms of military intelligence, made such an awful mistake and told Ukrainians go and fight when they could sign a peace agreement in a couple of days after Russia started? And as nowadays Arestovich and other Ukrainians are stating, 300,000 Ukrainians would be alive. But it looks like Americans and Brits were sure that Russian military is not worth it. What went wrong?
Well, it doesn't reflect the attitude or the dreams or wishes of the American people, or I think the British people, or I think the German people. I think the people have been hijacked by certain globalist parasite military industrial complex war profiteers who pay politicians, and they have advanced this war in Ukraine using, you know, it goes back 20, 30 years. When the Soviet Union dissolved, there were those of us, and Ronald Reagan, I think, was part of it, who wanted to embrace Russia and America like both allies and friends and brothers. And that was undermined by the CIA, who wanted to cannibalize Russia and take it apart and break it up, and as they've tried to do to Iraq and elsewhere. So that ideology remained, sadly, not shared by the American people, but by politicians. And this seemed to be an opportunity where NATO and the United States, running NATO, gobbling up countries from around Europe, would go into Ukraine and use it as a proxy army against Russia. And it's failed because they miscalculated the Russian mind, as we talked about a little bit earlier. Russia knows war. America doesn't know war. Britain doesn't know war. They've lived in peace for 56 years. Russia, as a country, as a people, and as a culture, have known war more than anyone else. And it gives them a strength, a stamina that the West didn't understand or calculate. And it's a shame because the Ukrainians have been brainwashed. They've been turned into Nazi thug lunatics, thinking that they are the darling of Europe. They're not. They're pawns that have been used to basically be destroyed. So I think the war is ending. The American people have overthrown their Congress and put in new leaders with the expectation and the demand: no more money for Ukraine or Zelensky, no more weapons for Ukraine or Zelensky. They fired the House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, because he wasn't strong on that. So I've said to men on the front lines in Soledar and Donetsk and elsewhere, there's no more money or weapons coming to Ukraine or Zelensky. And there are more Americans like me than Americans who want war. No one wants this. So I think everything's coming to an end. I think the Ukrainians have been destroyed, abandoned, and you're going to see Zelensky as a dead man walking. He'll be replaced. And I honestly think Russia is going to find one day soon that all of the Ukrainian fighters have either abandoned their post, laid down their weapons, or gone home. But I think this is collapsing, and it will continue to collapse over the next several months. So Russia's won, and it's now a cleanup operation. Russia now needs to go in and capture the hearts and minds of the Ukrainian people. It needs to raise up and show the Ukrainian people and the Ukrainian culture that Russia's like the prodigal father, and Ukrainians are like the prodigal son. Bring them back and then embrace and love. Now, the Nazis have to be punished and destroyed or imprisoned for what they want to do. And there needs to be no NATO weapons. In fact, I've said that when Russia goes into Ukraine, they should kick out every embassy and consulate from the West. Kick out the American embassy. Kick out the British embassy. Kick out the German and French embassy. Why do you want enemies in your house? So Russia needs to take over Ukraine, take over Kiev. It's the source of Orthodoxy. It needs to take over Odessa for the sake of the people living there. What I saw in Donetsk were people traumatized and wounded and their towns destroyed, living in a war ruin. because of the war weapons that the West has sent there. So I think we're going to witness, and we must witness, Russia go in and save Ukraine from the Nazi and the West NATO lunatics who have set it on fire.
But it doesn't seem like Europe is willing to stop. Because basically right now, Europe is, and America, they're fighting proxy war by Ukrainian hands with Russia. And even if when we finish with Ukraine, does mean that we have to stop? It looks like the world right now is facing the era of wars.
I think Europe has been a U.S. puppet. How can you explain the Germans allowing the Nord Stream pipeline to be blown up, as Seymour Hersh and others have exposed was a U.S. operation? It wasn't Ukrainians in bathing suits swimming off the end of a boat down and blowing up a pipeline. This was a professional naval operation. So the Nord Stream 2 pipeline destroyed Germany's cheap gas. That's an act of war against Germany. But Germany doesn't seem to have any character left or any pride to stand up for itself. The same with France. It's an effeminate, weak country under Macron, and Britain the same way with Rishi Sunak. And as you said earlier, Boris Johnson should be hung as a war criminal for the death of 300,000 Ukrainians. That is his fault and Joe Biden's fault. Russia should swear out arrest warrants for all of these politicians, including Americans, that have voted for this war, this crime against humanity and this genocide. Put out arrest warrants for them. So wherever they are, they'll be known and prosecuted and arrested. At least make the overture of doing that. This is how serious this is. Now, the West has always said to the Americans and the Europeans, Vladimir Putin and the Russians want to invade Caen, the south of France. They want to invade Italy. They want to invade Britain. They want to invade New York and Maine and Florida and Alaska. All of that is lies. Russia has no interest in that. It's never had interest in that. But this is the propaganda. But it's falling, I think, on deaf ears, because the American people, for one, you know, Tucker Carlson, Doug McGregor, Scott Ritter, myself, many, 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 many of us, Senator Dick Black, we're all solidly on the side of Russia, not because of Russia, but because of the truth, because of righteousness, because we're against this war that is, and any war that is based on profit. So I think it's all coming to an end, but you're going to see revolutions in Europe. You're going to see the revolutionary overthrow of political leaders. I think Rishi Sunak and Macron and Merkel, not Merkel, but Scholz, you're going to see a rise of new leaders rise up like we saw in Italy. She's a little weak, but I think you're going to see more and more leaders like in Slovakia putting an end to all of this U.S. adventurism, NATO. And in America, a civil war is brewing. I don't think they're going to allow an election in 2024. You and I have talked about that before.
That will be a hell of an election, should I say. With Biden right now, he's a scary guy. He has no idea what he's doing. And he can start a war, nuclear war, in no time. And now with the situation in Israel, and now with the huge problem with China and Taiwan, only God knows what can that all be. But I'm afraid we're going to see the nuke attack.
Yeah.
In coming months.
The United States under Biden has become a mad dog, and it's a mad dog in your backyard that you don't want to let into your house. You want to keep your eye on it. You want to keep it at a distance. You don't need to go out and engage it, but you need to isolate it. And Russia is doing that with the political public relations influence of the BRICS consortium. By creating BRICS, not because Russia wanted to, but because it had to, it fell into their lap with the sanctions. This is everything is blown back in the face of the United States. And Russia has emerged as the leader of the BRICS nations. And now you've got Saudi Arabia, Iran. I think Turkey should be brought in. So you capture the leading countries of the Islamic world. And then you have Russia, China, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, parts of Africa, Asia, all uniting in an economic, political, diplomatic alliance that can balance the NATO, EU, Western hegemony agenda. So that's that. Diplomatic war and political war is just as important as kinetic war. Biden, I do see, is going to probably sink an American aircraft carrier in the Persian Gulf, like the Gulf of Tonkin. They'll blame it on Iran. They'll try and do a strike on Iran. That's where Russia needs to come to the aid and support of Iran and Syria. They need to realize if they allow any of these countries to fall, it will weaken Russia and its long-term...
Not in our plans. Definitely not in our plans to let them fall. Mm-hmm. Not a scenario that we're willing to go with.
Yeah.
And by the way, Syria survived only because and thanks to Russia.
I know.
That was quite an operation. But what will be the destiny of the United States? Because it looks like that America has been hijacked from the American people.
It has.
And not only propaganda, but also whomever is in charge is working against those who have willingness and mightiness and courage to tell the truth. Is it safe for you to be in the States?
You know, a lot of people have said that. Are you safe going back? Why are you coming? Why are you speaking the truth? And, you know, sharing with Peter earlier, there are times where you have to stand up and tell the truth. Sunlight is the disinfectant to death and lies and poison of what we see right now. And I, of course, reflect on the great writers and poets of Russia, Dostoevsky, Solzhenitsyn, Tolstoy, thousands of others that you know better than I ever will. The Russian spirit of these poets, I think, is universal. There are times where you have to stand up and tell the truth. There are times where you cannot back down. There are times where you have to say, this is wrong, this is evil. And the West's agenda, besides war, in the LGBT, climate change, homosexual agenda, pedophilia, bug eating, all of the politically correct New Age, New World Order ideology is evil. It's sick, it's madness, and it's evil. And Americans are standing up against it. I think there'll be a civil war in America because the Democrat, leftist, Biden types are so angry, so ferocious. Look at what they've done to the Trump supporters, thrown them in jail. They're trying to prosecute Donald Trump, the leading American political Republican contender. They may try and assassinate him. The Democrat Biden administration, I seriously think, have lost all sense of reality. They are narcissistically delusional. And I think you're going to witness the United States break up.
And that's not the America I love. And that's not the America I used to know well. Because America that I know is America of good Christians.
Yes.
That believe in God, that every Sunday they go to church, yes. They raise the family, they love the kids. And the one that I see representing America nowadays, definitely far from American Idol, American hero.
They hijacked the election against Donald Trump. They overthrew him in a fake election, and they've been running America like a tyrannical police state ever since. They will not back down or adjust.
That's and why. Trump is not pro-Russian candidate. He's far from being pro-Russian.
He did very
stupid. He's pro-American. That's what's important right now.
Well, I was upset that Trump gave weapons to Poroshenko. I thought that was a terrible mistake. And I've seen other things that he's done. But he was surrounded by liars and people that were disloyal. And it was his fault to have them there.
Yeah, he could never put his team together.
No, he never did. And he didn't seem to really learn. And there were threats of impeaching him. But again, he was the president. He had an opportunity to say to the American people, I promised you we'd get along with Russia. We're going to get along with Russia. I promised you that we're not going to have a war.
There were two promises that he never came through. One on Russia and the second one on fighting the swamp of Washington policy.
Yes.
And that's what finally actually got him.
Yes.
Because he had to dry the swamp. He didn't do that.
No. He fell short. And, you know, when you fail to burn out a cancer, it grows back.
Exactly.
And that's like the Ukrainian Nazis. Russia cannot allow them to have a peace, a 38 parallel, a stalemate. They can't listen to anything the West says about peace, when there is no peace.
No.
Russia needs to go in and say, no, we're not even talking to you.
Exactly. So this time we have to clean it. Yes. We have to make the job right.
For the sake of your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
Did you like it at Donetsk and down there? Was it dangerous? Shelling?
Yeah, shelling every day, mines everywhere, artillery rounds being fired at buildings where, you know, you had rubble, piles of rubble, all the windows knocked out. Half the city was in darkness. The people were always in happy spirits, though. I never had stones thrown at me because I was an American, and they kind of looked at me when they heard English. I had a wonderful team that kept us alive, and of course, the greatest military men are the Russian soldiers and volunteers. And
they're incredible.
People from around the world have come to help Russia, from Japan, South Korea.
Oh, look who's there. That's you. Well,
carrying that body armor is pretty heavy.
Yeah, by the way, yeah, it fits you. You look good in it. Actually, I know the manufacturer of this body armor. It's probably one of the best in the world now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was a wonderful experience that I wanted to take back to the United States. Look, I've seen the weapons. I've seen the HIMARS. I've seen the defense contractor. I've seen all the bullet holes. You are bombing, in the name of the American people, civilians, and it's a war crime. The American people don't want this. And Zelensky and the Nazis, we fought in World War II. It is an abomination that we are backing these people now against Russia, a conservative, traditional values, family-oriented country, like you said America is.
Scott, but look at you. You know, once a warrior, always a warrior.
That's true. Can't get it out of your blood, yeah. Like you.
And thank you so much. It's an honor to be with you in the studio. And please, anytime, whenever you want to, just... Be my guest.
I will always come back to Russia. It's a beautiful country.
I got to say, I think Scott is just a magnificent ambassador representing the United States, and I was very impressed with the host. He was very serious, very knowledgeable, understanding of American politics, perhaps slightly behind the curve in terms of the demographics of the extent to which America is still a predominantly Christian and family-centered country, because the Democrats have been doing everything they can to change and undermine the fundamental character of this nation. Just to exhibit the colossal stupidity of NATO and the Biden admin in relation to Ukraine. NATO boss declares Ukraine bound for alliance membership. I mean, this is as far from reality as one could get. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has declared that all allies agree that Ukraine will eventually become a member of the alliance. I mean, how preposterous is that? In the end, I mean, this is the reason Russia had to intervene. Ukraine has lost the war. So what's the Secretary General saying, declaring they're going to eventually make Ukraine NATO? That would mean there would be no peace. That would mean Russia would have to take all of Ukraine. This is just stupidity, colossal stupidity. However, he stressed this will only happen once the war is over and Ukraine has undergone necessary reforms. Stoltenberg announced that discussion during the upcoming NATO-Ukraine Council meeting will focus on priority reforms that Ukraine must make in order to meet the requirements for joining NATO. What the hell? He highlighted the support NATO has already provided Ukraine, including air defense coalition, billions in funding, opening an F-16 training center in Romania for Ukrainian pilots. He expressed confidence in Ukraine's future membership. He also made it clear that certain conditions must be met. These include full interoperability between Ukrainian and NATO forces based on NATO doctrines and training procedures, as well as the end of the war. Well, how unbelievable is that? I mean, truly, how unbelievable. Shifting to the Middle East, Joaquin Hagopian has published a new piece on my blog. Israel Lies exposed a bit shifting global tide for Palestinians, where there's no doubt he's got it right. Let me share part of this with you. In less than 2 months, the soaring death rate in Gaza has now surpassed 15,000. The slaughter of Palestinians is recognized by UN experts as genocidal incitement. Israel nor the U.S. never anticipated the global pushback against the Israeli carnage in Gaza. As of late, even the Mockingbird mainstream media outlets are turning against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's regime in its brutal assault on the Palestinian civilian population living in Gaza, with virtually the whole world watching via social media. The New York Times reported on November 25th that Israel's bloodbath is killing innocent civilians at an unprecedented historic pace, with over 10,000 women and children slaughtered so far. The Jewish state's appalling record violence is turning into a PR disaster for Netanyahu. A fast-growing number of Israeli leaders, including ex-security chief, current opposition leader Yair Lapid, and now two former prime ministers, Ehud Olmert and Ehud Barak, are all calling for Bibi's removal and formation of a new government to end this no-win war. Let me just mention, I find it especially striking that Ehud Olmert should be calling for Bibi's removal, because it was he, together with Bibi Netanyahu himself, who planned 9/11 to create a situation where America would be motivated to send our forces to the Middle East to take out the modern Arab state that serves as a counterbalance for Israel's domination of the entire region, which succeeded regarding Libya and Iraq, but fell short with Syria and Iran. For Paul Craig Roberts suggests what's going on now is an attempt to finish a job begun on 9/11. I'll be right back.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
As I mentioned previously, Scott Bennett and now Scott Ritter are essentially my featured guests today. I'm explaining the wonderful presentations they have made. I am so proud of Scott. I think he's doing absolutely sensational, and he's doing many of these interviews, and they're being distributed worldwide, including especially in the Middle East. Now here's Scott Ritter talking about Israel, its horrific and horrific genocidal, maniacal Zionist country where Hamas is winning the battle for Gaza. Let's check it out.
When you have these woke revolutions, it requires
and of course,
at some point to say, no, not going to do this.
Well, first of all, let's start off by the fact that the defense budget is in the vicinity of $800 billion a year. That's a lot of money. So let's stop talking about running out of money, okay? The Pentagon gets an awful lot of money. The other thing that nobody's talking about is the Pentagon has failed its sixth consecutive audit. The Pentagon has assets of around $3.3 trillion. It can't account for 65% of them. They don't know where it is. Now, obviously, some of this stuff exists and all that, but the last thing we need to do to solve the Pentagon's problems is throw more money at it. I'm just being straight up honest here. The other thing you have to realize is even with all this military deployment that we have, it doesn't make a difference because the Pentagon today can't win a war against a major opponent. All the money that we put into it, all the investment and such, let's look at Ukraine right now. We're going bankrupt supplying Ukraine with our money, our equipment. We've deployed 100,000 troops to Europe. We're talking about beefing up NATO forces. And we're just going flat broke. We're running out of stuff to give them. We can't produce enough artillery ammunition to sustain the operations. Meanwhile, Russia, on the other hand, this past year has mobilized 600,000 troops to fight in the special military operation. They've also mobilized an additional 600,000 troops to expand their military from 900,000 to 1.5 million. Why? Because they want to be NATO. No, because we're expanding NATO. We're expanding NATO. We're inviting Finland and Sweden in there. That means that Russia now has to create new military districts and create new forces to man these military districts to protect themselves. We have a posture that says we're going to threaten the Arctic. So Russia has to build new forces to protect the Arctic. We're working with the Japanese and the Koreans to threaten the Russians in the Pacific, so they have to deploy forces there. But what I'm trying to say is that Russia's not having the same problem we're having. Russia's generated all these new troops, and they're winning a war in Ukraine right now. Even the mainstream media can't ignore that fact anymore. I don't think there's any mainstream media outlet that's saying, oh, no, Ukraine's secretly winning. Nope, they're losing. Everybody acknowledges this. Russia's has no ammunition shortage. Their defense industry has adapted in the time period to produce not only the artillery munitions, but the tanks, the armored vehicles, the artillery systems, new systems, drone warfare is a whole new thing that's taking place right now. The Russians have reinvented drone warfare. Americans still are out there flying little plywood drones, or we're flying big, MQ-9 Reapers that'll get shot down in a real war. Russia's out there doing the real stuff, the way war's supposed to be fought. And yet here we are talking about we need more money to send another carrier battle group to the region. What's the carrier battle group going to do? Israel has a very large air force. They're American-made aircraft. They drop American-made bombs by pilots who are trained to American standards. So they bombed Gaza into smithereens. Are more American airplanes and bombs going to change that outcome? Nope. Hezbollah has gone to war against Israel in the past and been bombed by Israel and beat Israel. Our American plane, here's the other thing, guys. What have we done for the last 20 years? American pilots are very good at taking off, flying through uncontested airspace, meaning no enemy air defense whatsoever, no enemy aircraft trying to shoot them down, and dropping bombs on Afghan wedding parties or Iraqi villages. That's what we're expert at doing, killing innocent civilians. And I hate to be too acrimonious here, but come on, guys, we've killed so many innocent people over the course of the last 20 years, and we've lost. I mean, my God, we got beat by the Taliban. We got beat by the Taliban, okay? This vast military got beat by the Taliban. We got beat in Iraq. We didn't win that war. We haven't won a war lately because we don't know how to win a war. What we're good at is spending money. We have a military system, a military industrial complex combined with a military structure. Let's not cut them. The generals are as much to blame as the industrialists because they built this edifice that doesn't work. I'm not a big fan of Donald Trump, but I relish the day that he called General Mattis and his generals together about Afghanistan and said, "You guys suck. You don't know how to win wars. But you told me you just needed more troops, more bombs, more this and that, and things are going to happen, and nothing happened. You suck. We're out of there." And I'm like, wow.
How to open your car door while submerged underwater, a fatal construction flaw in all recent
An American president that actually realizes the military is lying to him and that they do suck and they don't know how to fight. And maybe we need to get new generals. Maybe we need to learn how to take junior officers and imbue them with a sense of responsibility, duty, and honor, and as they progress through the ranks, not allow the reality of the corruption of the system to corrupt them, so that when you become a general, you're playing the game as opposed to doing what you're supposed to be doing to protect our nation. Maybe then we might have a military that actually could go forth, close with, and destroy the enemy through firepower maneuver, but we can't do that right now. If we fought the Russians, they would whip us, hands down, whip us. If we fought the Chinese, be a no-brainer. That's like Pop Warner going up against the NFL, baby. It ain't going to happen. Even fighting these insurgents, if we fought the Iranians, they'll beat us. We can't win a major war right now because we have all this money we spend. But like I told you in the audit, 65% of they don't know what happened to it. They don't know where it is. I mean, look at how we got. And there's a game being played here. This is why I call it corruption. It's not just incompetence. It's corruption. Congress said, we don't have any money to give to Ukraine. So what did the Pentagon do? Oh, we made an accounting error, and suddenly we have tens of millions of dollars of stuff available. We just found it. It's here. Let's give it to the Ukrainians, and we don't need congressional approval. They lie, they lie, they lie, they lie. That's the bottom line. They lie. Now, I would like the U.S. Congress to function the way it's supposed to. I would like the U.S. Congress to pass budgets when they're supposed to. I would like the United States of America to function the way the Constitution envisioned. And if I were in the military, I certainly would appreciate not operating after one continuing resolution after another, because you can't do any long-term budget planning. It's actually more expensive the way, because right now when we buy weaponry, when we purchase things for the military, we're paying top dollar because we can't program it down the thing. So it's just wasteful all over. You would get fired from any job you had if you behaved in your employment the way the military behaves, if you handled money the way the military handles money, if you lost things the way the U.S. military, if you're supposed to produce Porsches and I come to buy the Porsche and I can't, it doesn't turn, the tire's flat, the wheel falls off. You haven't produced a Porsche, you produce a piece of junk. The U.S. military is supposed to produce the finest combat force on the face of the earth. We're Americans. I mean, I know I'm become that little ugly, hubris-filled American, but my God, we're Americans. We're supposed to be better than this. We're supposed to be good. We're not. We're not, and they're spending all the money. There's people in Flint, Michigan right now that still drink crap water. Imagine what they could have done with some of this money. Right here in Albany, New York, I got homeless people. It's 16 degrees at night. homeless people with drug addictions, alcoholism, mental health problems. Nobody's taking care of them. Nobody cares about them. We have a country that needs fixing. We have a country that has a whole bunch of problems. And we're instead taking all this money, throwing it into a military that's dysfunctional. Ladies and gentlemen, they failed six consecutive audits. Six. Yeah. They don't know where trillions of dollars of stuff is. It's gone. That's our money they took. Our money. Why don't we get angry? Why don't we get furious? Why do we have to sit here and listen to this garbage reporting about how the Pentagon's out of money? Well, then park the damn carrier. You know, if Mike comes to me and said, Dad, I want to borrow the car. I say, okay, but you got to put gas in it. And they call me and say, ran out of gas. I said, that's your problem. Park the car. All right. You should have planned it a little bit better.
That's a great analogy.
Put an aircraft carrier in the Mediterranean, but we're out of money. Park it, baby. Park it. That's reality. That's the way the world works. But don't sit here and tell me you need more money. Not when there's so much stuff going on in this country that needs money. Real Americans need this. And what are we doing this for? We're supporting Israel that's carrying out genocide. Okay, let's also keep this in perspective. This ain't like the aircraft carriers going out to save the world. It's not like there's bad guys out there that are trying to do harm to America. These are Palestinians that are tired of 75 years of brutal colonial oppression occupied by, you know, an Israeli government and Israeli people that have said, you don't have a right to exist, that we won't accept the Palestinian state. I'm not going to sit here and defend every tactical decision made by anybody. War is hell. Violence is violence. People die. It sucks. And we should condemn any murder of innocent people. But there's very few innocent people in Israel. Very few. And the reason why I say that is that Zionism is an illness. It is the ultimate expression of racial supremacy, of ethnic supremacy, of the genocidal endorsement. Because Zionism says that because somebody wrote something in the damn Bible thousands of years ago, that suddenly all this land where millions of people live on doesn't belong to them anymore. That God has reached down and touched a select few people. I mean, God, come on. I read the Bible. I'm not the biggest religious guy in the world, but, you know, I think it was, you know, God made the heavens and the earth. So God made it all. He's like God. She's like God. Who knows? He, she, it, what, I don't care. 6 days they made the earth. Seventh day he rested. Okay, God needs to rest too. But when he made the earth, did he really just go, you guys are good, everybody else is bad? It's like when an American president says, God bless America. I always love that. God bless. Really? God bless us? Only us? Just us? Because we're exceptional, baby. We're America. We do it better than anybody else. So God damn the rest of the world. That's what you're saying. When you say that, that means that nobody else counts. Absolutely. Zionism is about only the Jewish people counting in Israel. Not Jewish. I'm not tainting the Jewish faith. I'm saying that if you are a Jew that says that Zionism gives you an inherent right to create an Israel without any consideration of the people who already live there, then you're a racist. You're a supremacist. And America shouldn't be dropping bombs in your defense. We should be bombing you into the Stone Age because you are the evil that resides in the world today. But no, the aircraft carriers that we ran out of money to support, they're there to support the Israelis murdering Palestinians. And this should sicken every American.
Yeah. I think that was completely brilliant. And that Scott Ritter and Scott Bennett as well are going to go down as among the greatest heroes of our era for having the courage to speak out. Meanwhile, Scott Ritter has also spoken about the tactics taking place in Gaza, that the IDF is in retreat, that they are afraid that urban warfare with Hamas is suicidal. Let's see his thoughts about the tactics used in Gaza.
Don't buy another pair of glasses until you've seen what this new invention can do. These self-adjustable glasses are taking the world by storm. They let you achieve a...
People being killed are actually Hamas fighters. And there's a difference, qualitative difference, too. So...
The fasting mimicking diet...
Sorry about these commercial things.
It is a diet that makes your body believe that it is fast.
Well, I think... First of all, to talk about the Houthi and talk about what's going on in Syria and Iraq, it's more like, you know, what they call asymmetrical warfare, where these lesser powers are able to apply pressure and get bigger bang for the buck by disrupting not just the military aspect, but the political aspect, wars, politics, you know, extension of politics by other means. And so, you know, the Houthi seizing ships, you know, it's not the end of the world, but it creates political pressure. First of all, what's it do to insurance rates? We don't know, Ida. But, you know, that's problematic right there. And from a propaganda standpoint, it's not a good look to have the Houthi take over these ships. You know, and then how do you have to stop it? You have to deploy naval forces into the region, which are now going to be dedicated to stopping a handful of Houthi. So you're spending billions of dollars to stop, you know, $1 million operation. That economically doesn't pay off in the long run as well. It's the same thing with the United States. You know, in Iraq and Syria, these militias are firing these weapons that cost thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars. What is our response? It's the sortie aircraft that are running us millions of dollars per flight hour to launch a strike, and we're losing equipment on the ground that costs millions of dollars. From a cost perspective, it's game set match for the insurgency, because we haven't dented them. We blew up a couple warehouses in a place where we always are blowing up warehouses. Do we really think the Iranians are that stupid? Hey, where are we going to take the stuff we're transiting to Lebanon? Why don't we put it in that warehouse they just blew up last month? It's a good idea. No, because we just blew it up again this month. So I think you're 100% right. The U.S. military is saying we need to bring this asymmetrical conflict to an end because it's not to our advantage. Now we go to the Israelis. Like I said, let's put politics aside and let's just talk about a pure operation, urban warfare. But it's not just urban warfare. If you study, for instance, the battle at Iwo Jima, the Marines going across, the Japanese had built, 15 kilometers worth of tunnels underneath Iwo Jima, which is barren ground on the top, the furthest thing from urban warfare you want. And from those tunnels, they were able to resist, you know, the Marines for months. Some of the Japanese hit out for years. The final organized resistance on Iwo Jima didn't end until 1948, when the last Japanese came out of the tunnels and said, okay, we're done. But the Marines had a hell of a time fighting on Suribachi and then fighting their way across because the Japanese just kept popping up out of tunnels and picking off Marines here or there and then dropping back down. But now we complicate it by putting a city on top of it and then blowing that city up into rubble. I've written about, you know, the experience of the Germans in Stalingrad, where they brought in their elite sapper units, the pioneer units, to engage in this kind of warfare against the Russians, who just simply dug into the rubble. And they couldn't break their back in the October, the barricades factory and through else. They bled to death because the Russians just were able to take advantage of this new reality where there's no maneuver room. It's just brutal fighting. And I don't care how well-trained you are. A bullet kills you just like everybody else. The same thing, Monte Cassino, this abbey that was blown up by American bombers in Italy. You know, the British, the Poles, the Indians, the Americans, the New Zealanders all went up and tried to dig out the 6th Parachute Division from the rubble. We couldn't because they're dug in there. They had the advantage. Now we take an enemy who's fighting from rubble. Because understand what that means. That means that tanks can't maneuver effectively in the streets. It means that infantry now is going to get separated from the tanks. The tanks, as they move down, instead of the infantry bounding forward, covering for them, the tanks come pulling ahead, and suddenly a Hamas guy pops up, hits them with the RPG, bam, tank is down. Maybe not destroyed, but immobilized. Immobilized in the middle of the city. That crew has to get out. So now the crew's coming out. They get hit by, you know, again, Hamas guys with machine guns stopping up or rifles firing in. The infantry's trying to maneuver, but the rubble's slowing them down. And as they maneuver forward, focus on this, pop, two guys come up from behind, throwing some grenades, spray them down, then disappear again. This is what's going on right now. Hamas has lured Israel into a battlefield that Hamas designed. Hamas knew that Israel was going to drop these buildings. They knew it. Because that's what Israel does. And they built this tunnel network that was designed to withstand this bombardment, that deeper than the bombs can penetrate, going everywhere with backup systems, redundancies, etc. you know, Israel says they killed 1,000. I bet you they don't have 1,000 bodies. I have been in the business of doing battle damage assessment, and sounds to me like it's a little bit of guesswork that they might have a couple hundred bodies of people that are fighters. But are these really Hamas fighters? Because one of the things that you know we now know, take a look at what happened on October 7th. Hamas went out there and carried out the initial breaching operations and the directed military operations. But behind Hamas came a wave of militias and just ordinary folk who came out and, you know, did their thing, took hostages too. Hamas said, we need a ceasefire before the ceasefire happened because we have to go out and find out, you know, who took hostages so we can bring them all together so we can get them all released, you know, because there's guys out there freelancing. So we don't know that, you know, the people being killed are actually Hamas fighters. And there's a difference, qualitative difference too. So the bottom line is this, the Israeli newspapers recently published a story about some of these reserve battalions that had to be pulled out of Gaza because they refused to fight.
Sorry about that, but, you know, Scott Breer is right on. They're very, very worried. It's completely outrageous. Another question being raised here is whether Israel is playing disease in Gaza as the next phase of genocide. Untreated diseases will likely end up killing more Palestinians in Gaza than Israel's bombings, reports have said. Israel has indicated the spread of preventable disease in a bombed-out coastal city of Gaza would be the next genocidal step in its war effort against Hamas. At least 15,000 Palestinians have been killed in Israeli airstrikes since the start of the war campaign, about 40% children. Koy Irad, former head of the Israeli National Security Council, spoke about how rampant disease could benefit a military campaign. I mean, how disgusting is this? And the world is just going to stand by and watch while this slaughter takes place? Meanwhile, and I appreciate this, a top Chinese diplomat has said Israeli violence is violating a red line. Wang Yi called for the immediate release of those forcibly detained in the conflict and in accordance with UN Security Council resolutions, United Nations. The Chinese authorities consider Israel's drastic measure to get Palestinians in the Gaza Strip absolutely unacceptable and oppose the forcible transfer of civilians, Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi said. We should take more practical and forceful measure to protect civilians, to protect them in armed conflicts. This violence against civilians is a red line in international law, he told a meeting in the Middle East at the UN Security Council. All violence and attacks against civilians are unacceptable. China is speaking out clearly. Why not the United States? Why are we condoning this? Even China is condemning it. The United States is just in a grotesque situation. Meanwhile, Colonel McGregor says the Pentagon claims it has no more money for the Middle East. This is in a tweet. Douglas McGregor, Pentagon, said it has no more money for Middle East buildup. Well, that's very interesting because, as Scott Ritter explained, when it came to Ukraine, while the Pentagon said it had no money when Congress wouldn't forward more at the time, they said, oh, wait, we had an accounting error. Here it is. Meanwhile, Iran has unveiled a new hypersonic missile in an apparent warning to the United States and Israel. I'm troubled very much by this, to wit, that a vital tunnel between Russia and China has been blown up as an act of sabotage. A tunnel that is Russia's primary link to communist China has just been destroyed in an explosion that looks like an apparent act of sabotage, have no doubt about it. The Severomorsky Tunnel is the main link from Russia to China. it collapsed after Ukraine's security service allegedly blew it up in the Russian Republic of Buryatia, according to Newsweek. The explosion that took place was conducted by the security service of Ukraine, paralyzing the only serious route of railway communication between the Russian Federation and China, news outlet RBC Ukraine reported Thursday. It's unclear if the explosives have been hidden inside the 10-mile tunnel or placed on a freight train before it entered. Either way, I'm not surprised. Here we have a story about it. Actually, you can see the massive explosion here. Here's the story. As a result of sabotage, a railway echelon carrying 41 tankers of petroleum products, including diesel and aviation fuel, was destroyed while exiting the Saramuski Tunnel in the far east of Russia. I put nothing past the Ukrainians, the neo-Nazis, or for that matter, the United States. If we will destroy the Nord Stream pipeline, there's nothing we will not do. And when we return from our break, I'm going to be talking about the debate that took place last night, which was pretty damn interesting in ways that I think perhaps the Democrats had not anticipated. Before going there, let me mention one more story. WHO's statement on a reported cluster of respiratory illnesses in children in northern China appears to be a result of electronic warfare, the use of 5G, where children are falling dead in the streets. Bear in mind, we've had a tremendous proliferation of 5G networks right here in the United States. It would appear that depending on the frequency at which they are set, the effects they can have that are harmful to human beings and other living things are staggering.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, last night I watched and participated in a live debate between DeSantis and Newsom on Real Deal Media with Dean Ryan, and I want to tell you a lot about it. Let me begin initially with ABC report takeaways from the DeSantis-Newsom debate, where they did their best to make it look as though it had been a pretty even match. Check this out. Oh, forgive the commercials, damn it.
The style is the
one. I'm very, very sorry about that.
Play music. The debate began with Governor Newsom addressing the question, why debate Governor DeSantis, a presidential candidate, when Newsom isn't even in the race?
I'm here to tell the truth about the Biden-Harris record.
The governors agreed to a primetime showdown after an ongoing public feud. Newsom highlighting former President Trump's huge lead in the Republican primary.
How's that going for you, Ron? You're down 41 points in your own home state.
This is a slick, slippery politician whose state is failing.
DeSantis took aim at Newsom's record in California on everything from crime and homelessness to the high cost of living, pointing out Newsom's own father-in-law moved away.
Well, I was talking to a fella who had made the move from California to Florida, and he was telling me that Florida is much better governed, safer, better budget, lower taxes, all this stuff. And he's really happy with the quality of life. And then he paused and he said, oh, by the way, I'm Gavin Newsom's father-in-law.
Newsom attacked DeSantis for his views on LGBTQ issues and for flying migrants to Martha's Vineyard.
I met with those migrants that you lied to under false pretense. That kind of gamesmanship, using human beings as pawns, I think, is disqualifying.
The issue of abortion offered another sharp contrast.
So extreme is your ban that criminalizes women and criminalizes doctors that even Donald Trump said it was too extreme.
I think we're better off when everybody counts, when everybody has an opportunity to do well. And that bill attaches when there's a detectable heartbeat for the child.
In the end, Newsom offered this assessment.
There are profound differences tonight, and I look forward to engaging. But there's one thing in closing that we have in common is neither of us will be the nominee for our party in 2024.
DeSantis accused Newsom of running a shadow campaign for the White House. Speculation still surrounds Newsom's ambitions, both for 2024 and 2020.
Well, let me say, Newsom was being very coy, even cute, and suggesting, you know, right off the bat that neither of them are going to be their party's nominee for 2024. I believe, in fact, as I've many times repeated, that Newsom is actually already going to be already designated by the DNC to be the Democrat candidate in 2024. They can't run with Biden. I mean, he's totally incompetent. If they're going to steal an election, they can't say because it was out of enthusiasm for Joe Biden, because nobody has any enthusiasm for Joe Biden. But if they bring in Gavin Newsom as the new face, they can say, oh, people were so thrilled to have a refreshing change of pace with Gavin Newsom. Plus, he'd been make that, then they can steal the election and claim it was because he was a fresh face. But he's done so much damage to California. This really was the country's first opportunity to get an impression of Gavin Newsom. And I can tell you, from a political point of view, it was a horror show. I was floored by how thoroughly Gavin Newsom was dismembered. Here's another report about it that captures the flavor of the real event. Conservatives across social media celebrate Florida Governor Ron DeSantis' debate performance against California Governor Gavin Newsom and confirm why they thought he won. DeSantis is kicking Newsom's ass, conservative host Mark Levin posted on X. In fact, Newsom is looking and sounding silly. It's true. DeSantis went up against a Democrat Party star and whipped him, Levin added in another post. It's just that simple. Here's another. I was 100% wrong on this debate. I thought Gavin Newsom would be likable and intelligent. Outkick founder Clay Travis posted, I was incorrect. This is a massacre. If this were a boxing match, Newsom Corner would have thrown in the towel a long time ago. Completed total win from DeSantis from open to close. I agree 100%. Here's another. My daughter died in the Parkland mass shooting, Andrew Pollack, father of Parkland victim Meadow Pollack, posted on X. DeSantis was not even governor when it happened, but I'm sure as hell glad he became governor shortly after. Governor DeSantis fired the incompetent people responsible. He didn't demonize lawful gun owners. Newsom is trash. Well, we know Parkland was just another stage event. In fact, it was a Valentine's Day. He sent the kids home from a school that had around 3,500 students. If they had been there, you would have vast proliferation of cell phone videos and all that. But, of course, they don't exist because the students weren't even there. They left behind a couple of dozen to be student crisis actors, including, of course, David Hogg, who turns out to be the son of an FBI agent. The whole thing was absolutely fraudulent from beginning to end and was worked into the massive March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C., which was held only a few weeks later, even though to have an event in Washington, D.C. that requires closing the streets. And this not only shut down the street, but it had all kinds of performances, some by rather famous figures, scheduled. You have to submit a permit 180 days in advance. In other words, prior to the Parkland shooting, they had long since submitted their permit for the event that they would later claim was inspired by the Parkland shooting. Here's another. Holy cow. Conservative commentator Chris Lewis posted on X, if you aren't blind, you are witnessing the dismantling of the California governor. Hannity puts a graphic of the facts and then Gavin says the opposite. DeSantis is destroying him with a simple comparison of records. This is absolutely 100% correct. Fox did a good job with their graphics. They had one early on, for example, showing that some 750,000 had fled California and another 450,000 had come to Florida. In other words, they're banning California because it's Newsom has turned the state into trash, and they're going to Florida. Similar results about crime and a host of other issues. It was all on the side of DeSantis. And while Hannity wasn't quite able to keep control, he should have had a system of lights on their podia. We had a red, green, and yellow. So as long as it's green, you're able to speak. When it turns orange, then you know you're about to have to end. And then red, you can't speak. Newsom was talking over DeSantis again and again and again. Sometimes you had all three of them talking, DeSantis, Newsom, and Hannity. But on the whole, although I'm not a big fan of Sean Hannity, I thought he did a very workmanlike, did a good job, and Fox did an excellent job of preparing their graphics. Here's another. I think DeSantis just ended Newsom, POTUS, Ambition, Substack publisher Jordan Satchel posted on X. Exposed him as a soulless lizard person. Landed haymakers all night. Best governor in the nation showed up in top form tonight. I agree with that. A Newsom spokesperson directed Fox Digital to social media posts from conservatives who thought DeSantis lost a debate, including GOP strategist Mark Vandred, who boasts that Newsom was bludgeoning the California, the Florida governor. That is frankly absurd. Frankly absurd. It was DeSantis all the way, even on issues where I might disagree with the governor. For example, he's got, in my opinion, an extreme position on against abortion, which I believe is a woman's right. I'm a pro-choice guy. There's no doubt that DeSantis prevailed. Here's how, another sign of how you know that DeSantis won. From Politico. Newsom camp. Hannity, DeSantis cheated. They dispute the charges. The messy primetime event outside Atlanta between Gavin Newsom and Ron DeSantis didn't end when the Fox News cameras stopped. Newsom team said DeSantis and Fox broke several rules. This is silly. Meanwhile, from Georgia, so much for that Newsom-Hannity bromance. Thursday's raucous debate is giving way to bitter disappointment with an outright hostility toward Fox News and its host from the California Democrats' camp. While they lost, of course, they're going to be unhappy. It was a complete and total catastrophe for Newsom. Mark my words. This was by far the most exposure I'd ever had to the governor. And I'm sure that's true of most Americans. And what impression they got from the beginning was simply appalling. He was unprepared. He was evasive. He wouldn't answer simple and direct questions. He would go on chattering, you know, a meaningless babble. He was promoting Biden and Harris as though they were doing good for the country. It was embarrassing. Before Ron DeSantis could unveil his poop map, and he did have a diagram, I've actually put it in articles of mine long back of the how much feces are found in San Francisco. I mean, it's appalling. Governor Newsom team frustration with Hannity and his crew centered on his promises to them that he would be a fair moderator, only to repeatedly sandbag the governor and give the entire affair a two-on-one dynamic as they saw it. The debate was rigged and Newsom still won. Newsom advisor Sean Clegg said, I didn't see anything rigged about it. I thought it was very well handled by Fox. I thought their preparations were impeccable. I thought Sean Hannity conducted himself as best he could, given that Newsom was repeatedly violating the rules and not letting DeSantis make points. I mean, it happened again and again and again. Here's a nice piece from the Babylon Bee that gives you a certain sense of the flavor. Newsom DeSantis debate to be sponsored by U-Haul. Alpharetta, Georgia. As Americans nationwide eagerly await tonight's debate between two men who will not be president after the 2024 election, and let me add an aside, why DeSantis would have engaged in this debate where he looked really good. Without any doubt, this is his single most impressive performance as a politician, in my judgment. If something were to happen to Trump, I say God forbid, if something were to happen to Trump, DeSantis, in my opinion, would be the odds-on favorite to become the Republican nominee for 2024. So I think this was a very wise investment on his part. Plus, he exposed the defects, the fault lines in Gavin Newsom that the Democrats have desperately been trying to conceal by pretending there's not going to be any primary. There's no need for caucuses on the Democrat side, that Biden's a shoo-in. It's obvious to any serious political analyst that Biden can't possibly be the nominee, and that the plan clearly is to slip in Newsom before the convention, after the primaries and caucuses, when Biden will withdraw. And how they get rid of Harris is anybody's guess, but they cannot run with her. She's ridiculous. She's a total airhead. Meanwhile, it's a Fox News announced the Gavin Newsom Ron DeSantis debate moderated by Sean Hannity would be sponsored by U-Haul. It's a perfect partnership, said marketing executive Phil Snedden. If there's any company or product that stands to gain the most from a debate between the governors of California and Florida, it's U-Haul. From our conversation with a sponsor, they're expecting a record number of calls from potential customers in California once they hear what life is like in Florida. The much-anticipated debate, which has been in the works for months, is expected to serve as the most persuasive argument yet to convince lovers of American freedom to flee the oppressive totalitarian regime in the communist territory once known as California. This should make it as clear of a decision as there could ever be, said political analyst Ryan Kitchen. If having Newsom and DeSantis on stage together at the same time, laying out their respective vision for what life should look like in America, doesn't convince people to get out of California while they can, nothing will. A spokesman for U-Haul admitted the moving truck vendor was expecting a big return on its investment. We love sponsoring anything Gavin Newsom does, said Paul Green, U-Haul's director of business development. Every time that guy opens his mouth, we do huge business in California. Come on, Governor Newsom, do your thing, buddy. At publishing time, U-Haul refused to comment on rumors that it offered to pay extra if Sean Hannity would agree to move to Siberia. But I'm saying, Sean actually was very good. I encourage you to watch. Just understand, this was a wipeout. Newsom dismembered himself. He was shooting himself in both feet at the same time. It was unbelievable. Meanwhile, here's another story I want to share with you. Global woke investments dropped $5 trillion in 2 years span. Get this. Global investment using woke environmental, social, and governance standards led to trillions of dollars of losses in a two-year span, especially in the U.S., according to a recent report. The biannual assessment by the Global Sustainable Investment Alliance showed the absolute value of reported sustainable investing ESG assets, such as those addressing social justice, climate change, alongside biodiversity and nature loss, dropped from $35.3 trillion in 2020 to $30.3 trillion in 2022, a 14% decline. This was no more apparent than in the U.S., where governors of Republican-led states have pushed to block ESG investment at the state and local level. Congress also earlier this year moved to nullify a new Department of Labor rule that allows retirement plan managers to incorporate ESG standards into their investment decisions. But President Joe Biden vetoed Congress's action, and the new rule has survived court challenges. The GSIA assessment showed ESG investments in the U.S. went from $17 trillion in 2020 to $8.4 trillion in 2022, a drop of 50.5%. The only other region that showed a loss was Canada, which declined 2.7% from $2.423 trillion to $2.358 trillion. Europe, Australia, and New Zealand and Japan saw substantial gains. Now, when I mentioned that what's going on here in terms of why DeSantis would want to participate, Kevin Barrett has a very nice report about, in essence, Robert Kagan calling for the assassination of Donald Trump. Get this. Robert Kagan, whose family will rule the neoconservative Kaganate of Khazaria after Ukraine is depopulated and Palestine liberated, according to some analysts, has published an op-ed in today's Washington Post claiming that Trump dictatorship is increasingly inevitable. But one can argue with his word choice, can the inevitable get even more inevitable, and accuse him of hyperbole. Is a Trump Reich really inevitable at all, much less increasingly so? It's undeniable that what he calls a Trump dictatorship, a Trump victory in 2024, followed by persecution, really it ought to be prosecution, of at least some of the Donald political enemies, is not such an unlikely prospect. Kagan, as much as he hates the inevitable Trumpian Reich, doesn't offer a single suggestion about how to stop it. Why mess with the inevitable? But then he's a neocon, and neocons believe the truth is too dangerous to speak in public, so they convey it between the lines for their fellow neocons to decipher. What dangerous message might Kagan be trying to convey to his tribe? The most obvious possibility is, hey, neocons, hey, deep state, it's time to assassinate Trump. It's the only option we've got left. That might explain the seemingly nonsensical phrase, increasingly inevitable. What he means is that it isn't quite inevitable yet, but soon will be, unless some Palestinian patsy with a Jewish hypnotherapist fires a few blank rounds in the general direction of Trump to distract people from the professional government with their silent weapons. What he's describing there, of course, is the assassination of RFK, or Sirhan Sirhan, Palestinian, just as you had the Palestinians calling up on 9/11 claiming to take responsibility when they had nothing to do with it, and where they played footage of Palestinians rejoicing that, as though it were concurrent with the events in New York City on 9/11, when it was archival footage from some past political or religious holiday, when in fact the Palestinians were just as slack-jawed and stunned at what was taking place as the rest of the world. Bobby was led out by the pantry instead of through the Great Hall at the Ambassador Hotel as originally planned. My suspicion is that Tom Mankiewicz, who had been his campaign manager, was instrumental in making the change in the exit route. And when Sirhan fired off his gun, and as Kevin observed, he'd actually been subjected to hypnosis by psychiatrists who worked for the CIA, who inappropriately boasted about doing that, triggered, I believe, by the girl in the polka dot dress, the security guard beside him, Thane Eugene Caesar, appears to have shot him behind the right ear from an inch and a half. And as he fell to the ground, Bobby grabbed at his tie. He continued firing, hit Bobby two more times, and a third shot went through his jacket. When Thomas Noguchi, a world-famous medical examiner, produced an autopsy report establishing exactly what I've just recorded as the facts about his death, the LAPD was so powerful, And instead of having to revise their report, with which it stood in dramatic contrast, no, Gucci himself was fired. Unbelievable. Kevin continues. It also explained why Kagan offers nothing beyond a long list of reasons why all of the constitutional liberal democratic means of stopping Trump won't work, even if he can't stop screaming that American liberal democracy is in mortal danger. Neocons believe in using extra-legal means, gangster methods covertly, while sanctimoniously intoning hymns of praise to whatever the reigning political ideology happens to be, in this case, liberal democracy. I think Kevin's got it right. He adds further, neocons despise actual liberal democracy and indeed all ideals up to and including the ideals of God and of the good. They believe the real world is always ruled by amoral Machiavellian gangsters like themselves. The worst thing about liberal democracy, according to Strauss and his acolytes, and this is the philosopher of neocon views, is that it empowers the rabble, the goyim, to rise up and defeat their masters and superiors, the Jews, as happened in that paradigm of liberal democracy, the Weimar Republic, which Kagan name-checks in his Kill Trump While We Still Can article. I'm going to be taking your calls right after the break, 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452. Take advantage of the opportunity to join and share your thoughts about what I've been reporting here today. The Republic is in dire straits, and with a staggering number of migrants coming across our border, could the number be as high as 50 million altogether? That's the latest report I have, is that America now is a nation of 50 million illegals in our population in the continental U.S. Remember, Trump has promised the largest deportation program in American history if he becomes president. If that were the only reason, it would be worth voting for him on that ground alone. I'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B, for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
As I observe, you're welcome to call 540-352-4452. I am so impressed and proud of Scott Bennett for his excellent reporting, for traveling to the Donbass, for being on Russian television, multiple different networks, and making a difference here. I think this is historic. It could have a, a major effect on public opinion in many regions. Urgently most needed here. Excuse me. Where, alas, most unlikely to have much of an effect, except by thoughtful Americans like the listeners to this show who already have a comprehension of what's going on. Mitchell. In the absence of callers for the time being, I would welcome your comments on any of these reports. I am so impressed by Scott Ritter as well. Your thoughts.
Hi, Jim. Hey, everybody. I hope you're doing well. Of course, Ukraine, the most corrupt nation in Europe, was overthrown by a color, I call it color colonialism. And all of Eastern Europe was colonialized by NATO and the West once it came from under Soviet rule. Those countries were not allowed to develop into their own independent nations. So they have been become vassal states of the U.S., NATO, and the Western Alliance. So what will stop NATO and what will stop all of this? Nothing. Only their overreach that they cannot control. I really wish that the conflict in Gaza would go a different way, but in all honesty, I don't see how it can. And it really sucks that the people of Palestine are essentially caught between warring minorities, as I look at it. Just as, here in the United States, in the Civil War or in the Revolutionary War, a small percentage of American citizens were actually, not only just active combatants, but actively supporting the revolution against Great Britain and the idea to be free. I think that when it comes to trying to maintain peace, a small minority can literally destroy it for everyone. So it's a rock and a hard place. So there is no other way that I can see that Israel can stop Hamas. But as I have said earlier, you know, I don't support either of these countries or either of these groups. They have so long been at each other's throat and have essentially had the knives out, you know, getting ready to gut each other. And no one and nothing is going to stand in their way. It's unfortunate. It's a sad, sad thing. But the, you know, just the 2 or 3% of a population, can literally destroy the peace. We see it in America, and many people don't realize it.
Well, just for the sake of clarity, Mitchell, while you say you're not standing with either Israel or the Palestinians, surely you're not endorsing genocide, and to that extent, at the least, you're opposed to what Israel is doing in its massive assault on the Palestinian people in Gaza. Am I right?
Well, absolutely, Jim. You know, genocide is, it's the elimination of a complete group of people, and it's horrible. I was going to call it deplorable, but, you know, because they peg that into the minds of people that applies to Donald Trump fans, you know, and MAGA. But, you know, it is humanity is crying out and the world is crying out for peace. The question is, can peace be had? You know, I just don't believe, you know, that there can be peace until, you know, we have the, you know, an all out major war in the Middle East. And, you know, whether, you know, I don't want to call it genocide, but until enough people die on both sides, until they're sick of the death and destruction that their respective ideologies have brought them to, what can change, and how can you change it? It's just it's a sad state of human nature and the human condition. Does that help?
Well, my take's a little different. I'm fully on the side of the Palestinians. You know, I mean, this is a longest standing international human rights issue that has existed since the founding of the State of Israel in 1948.
I agree.
And the world has refused to take responsibility and sort it out long before we reach this point. And now we have a ongoing slaughter. And while there was this ceasefire that endured for 5 or perhaps 6 days, apparently the conflict has resumed. The bombing is continuing. Is that consistent with your latest reports as well, Mitchell?
Oh, yes. This morning, I guess shortly after 7 a.m. their time, the hostilities restarted. Partially because terrorist attack at the bus stop in Jerusalem, which Hamas literally minutes later claimed responsibility for. And the, the Israelis said were upset that the number of hostages and, you know, others that were still being kept. So
Tell me more about that attack in Paris. I haven't caught up with that yet.
It was in Jerusalem.
Oh, in Jerusalem. Tell me.
Evidently, two gunmen stopped and got out of their car at a bus stop and had an M16s. One of them had an M16. One of them had a pistol. And they killed three people and wounded 16. I believe that was yesterday.
And Hamas is claiming response. Who did they kill?
Israeli citizens that were waiting at a bus stop.
I don't know. This sounds to me like it might be a put-up job. You know, nothing like trying to smear Hamas by doing something stupid. This seems to me to fall into that category of something stupid. What are your thoughts about it?
Well,
do you think Hamas actually did this, or do you think Israel just wanted to have an
incident? I think there are members of Hamas that actually did this. The truth is, you know, I guess I call them more of a mob than a terrorist army or whatever, but trying to control these radicalized fighters that they have created. I also blame Israel for creating the militarized fighters, but I also blame Hamas. So, you know, I think one of the misnomers that we're missing here, and I talked about it on my Morning Rumble show, 8 a.m. I usually kick it off on Monday through Friday. You know, Jim, if somebody says, I'm at war with you, and you say, no, I'm not at war with you, and the other side says, well, I'm at war with you, you can deny the truth of the fact that that group is at war with you, and you say, well, I'm not at war with you. But if they are in a war mode, you know, and they're coming at you and they're coming after you, you're at war. It doesn't matter if you deny the reality of it or not. You're at war. And I see, you know, I don't really believe that, and I'm pretty sure you might agree, that we really haven't had any peace, and that we've always, you know, since Israel was implanted in the Middle East by the UN, which is a horrible mistake, in my opinion. There has not been peace in the Middle East. There has been constant war one way or another. To me, the solution that the United Nations should have taken is they should have taken 100 square miles of the Rhineland and created the Jewish state in Germany. That would have been the only real poetic justice that might have come out of the idea of whether, how many people, you know, see, and this is where we get into another discussion about the Holocaust and everything else. And was it real or was it exaggerated or was it, you know, at what threshold, you know, does a number of people that have that are, sent off to a work camp or a slave camp or a concentration camp or whatever you want to call it, how many people have to die, whether it's through dysentery, whether it's through infections, whether it's through lack of medicine, whether it's through lack of food, you know, at what point does that stuff become genocide? You know, so there's a lot of things to tried to discuss on the way to finding a reasonable solution to what's going on in the Gaza Strip. And I cannot say that we have reached that point. I have said that the most difficult part of all of this is coming right now. That the invasion and the suppressing and the pacifying of the southern half of the Gaza Strip that is where the rubber is kind of going to meet the road, because they have literally pushed most or all the population into that zone, and to try to separate, you know, combatants and non-combatants, you know, people who are fighting or their family members that might be trying to stay by. I mean, it's we're going to see, I believe we're the death toll easily going to go 4 to 5 times what it is right now when Israel attempts to pacify the southern half of Gaza. Just because that it is, that the people are not going to want to leave their homeland. And I understand that. And, you know, and frankly, if people are invading my homeland, every person, you know, that could carry a gun would be a soldier, would be a combatant. So now that's just my ideas about stuff, but you know, this idea with the southern half of the Gaza Strip, this is where the Islamic world says enough is enough. Erdogan in Turkey is, you know, kind of foaming at the mouth to essentially become the leader of the Muslim world. Will the southern half of the Gaza Strip invasion, will that help solidify his position? I don't know. All I can tell you is that it's a cultural and it's a mess. And everybody has hard feelings on both sides. So I, you know, unless you can marry them all together, I don't see any way to avoid more and more bloodshed even into the future.
Well, I certainly agree for the short term, and I don't have any doubt it's going to expand. I'm very suspicious about this shooting you've described. It sounds to me like a deliberate provocation to not allow the ceasefire to continue. Pretty damn interesting, all things considered. I do have a report. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, you know, Jim, the real problem is, you know, we try to get along, and we have, you know, our democratic constitutional republic system here in the United States. And it's very hard for people in other countries because of their culture, their tribal aspects, their religion, and numerous other things that long-time psychological traits and habits. I just don't see how people are going to be able to put themselves aside to get that. Here's Brian's calling.
Okay. Let's get him on.
All right.
Brian, go ahead. Join the conversation.
Absolutely. When you talk about that shooting, being suspicious, because that's the whole reason Hamas was created, when they had the Oslo Accords and what Israel would do, they created Hamas, and they would always look for some incident so they could get out of enacting a peace agreement. So, you know, it's what they do. They control Hamas. They send the orders to them, and they say, oh, you need to go there and shoot up a bunch of people. We want to get out of this right now. That's how they work. I mean, you know, when you look at the history of what they've done, it's just right in their playbook.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious, but I do think Hamas is spun out of control of Israel. It's just they're going to do everything they can to manipulate a situation and blame it on Hamas as a political stunt. But, Brian, what they didn't anticipate was that Hamas would be so capable of conducting this urban warfare, especially after Colonel McGregor observed that he thought they'd already lost by destroying all these buildings and thereby creating all this debris that would be useful for the defenders. We heard Scott Ritter talking about that in such clear language, that this was a categorical blunder on the part of Israel that, you know, made it extremely difficult for them to conduct warfare. And Scott Ritter was reporting a half a dozen incidents where similar events had taken, and it made it impossible to dislodge the targets of the assault. And I think that's going to continue to be the case here. Your thoughts?
Well, that's probably a blunder on Israel's part, because when they gave orders to Hamas, they probably didn't take that into consideration. The tell for me was when all this started and they had all of those Merkava tanks Israeli owns on flatbed trailers lined up on a highway, one after the other. And I looked at that and my jaw just dropped, because you can, to me, that's just proof that it's controlled. Because if you're any kind of a military commander at all and you're following the war in Ukraine, and you realize that you can order these super cheap drones from China and put an explosive on them and drop them, you know, that's what a normal military would do that isn't controlled by Israel, you know. And I'm sure maybe they have lost some control of Hamas, but that would have been such a turkey shoot if they would have had drone technology. And so I just consider Hamas part of Israel.
Well, then is Israel fighting Israel? I mean, is that your take? I mean, honestly, Brian, I don't see any way of reconciling that position with the facts on the ground.
Well, that's what they do. They start it, and then it gets out of control. But I believe that, I mean, all you have to do is look at that music festival where all those Israelis were gathered, and then they're getting, you know, blasted by Apache helicopters. And, you know, the Israelis are killing Israelis. So,
well,
that's just how they work.
Brian, that, of course, is true. But Hamas has taken out over 100 Israeli tanks and armored personnel carriers. Israel is really being fought to a standstill in Gaza. I agree, of course, that the Israelis wanted to drive up the numbers, and they even used Apache helicopters provided by the U.S. to attack the festival. They have done this many times around the world. The question I'm asking is, well, then what do you make of the war going on in Gaza? I mean, how do you reconcile your suggestion that Hamas is just an extension of Israel with the losses Israel is sustaining in Gaza? I mean, do you think it's all a fantasy?
Well, I think maybe it got out of control on them. You know, that the foot soldiers are not going to realize that their leadership from above is controlled by Israel, and they're going to do their duty. They're going to do their best to try and destroy Israelis. But I believe the top leadership of Hamas is controlled by the Israelis.
Listen, and, let me,
you know,
bring
you
in
look
Paul.
At it.
Brian, Paul's here. I want to get him in because time is short. Paul, go ahead. Join the conversation, Paul.
Right. So I had an interesting thought. There's so many things that you say during your whole broadcast. I caught a lot of it, not all of it, but sometimes I feel like I want to take notes. I actually have on occasion taken notes in the past to address a certain point. But this idea that, you know, Israel is being fought to a standstill and that Hamas is, you know, doing quite well and, you know, taking out all these tanks and so forth. I don't know. I'm going to take your word for it. I don't follow this. And I think that many claims that we hear from any of these conflicts are dubious. But here's something that I thought of right now. It's kind of weird, but okay, so let's say that Hamas, quote unquote, can prevail, right? So what's going to happen to the mess? In other words, Hamas doesn't have the ability, the funds, or anything to rebuild, right? The only people, I mean, it's just, it's your typical situation where everybody that's in the midst of this is going to lose. The only, quote, winners, if you want to call it that, are the people above pulling the strings and the people that are manipulating the money and that they get to come in and, say, for example, get a contract, or the people that are handing out contracts to do whatever it is they're going to do, whether it's clear away the rubble and rebuild something in its place. So the people in Gaza are screwed either way, whether they win or, quote unquote, lose. You know, the bottom line is that they don't have self-determination. They don't have the ability to do anything that a free and sovereign people should and could be able to do. I mean, it's just awful, you know, when you think about it.
Yes, yes, yes.
Jim.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Jim, Paul's right. The Palestinians will never be free. As a matter of fact, the Palestinians and also the Israelis are being sacrificed for one reason and one reason only. The oil and gas reserves underneath the Gaza Strip, plus out there in the Mediterranean. That's all this is all about, because Israel does not want Palestinians are going to have a hold of the $500 billion worth of oil out there. They can go on forever with it. So it's a genocide, and it's all about the oil, and that's the bottom line. That's it. But it's all about the oil and the gas.
The oil and the water. the gas and the Ben Gurion Canal they want to build right through Gaza, and getting everyone, all the Palestinians, out of the lands of Palestine. I'm glad you called in. I wish we had more time. Do call in earlier. Meanwhile, everyone, spend as much time as you can with the people you love and care about. We do not know how much time we have left. Have a great weekend. Back on Monday.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. on Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at...